Nationwide test scores in math from 9-year-old students declined for the first time in the history of the National Assessment of Educational Progress tests. They started in the 1970s. Test scores in reading among that same age group also saw their largest decline in 30 years, and that's based on data released by the National Center for Education Statistics from 2020 to 2022. The assessments highlight the learning lost during the pandemic and the need for extra support to help children catch up. We want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. What are you wondering? What was your experience as a parent or a teacher? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Our guest is Richard Halverson, a professor of educational leadership and policy analysis at the UW-Madison School of Education. Rich, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
We have this information on standardized test scores. They are one sliver of the puzzle. How do we begin to assess how much learning we lost from the beginning of the pandemic until now?
I think that's it's a really good question to ask. And, you know, the role of schools in our society has always been pretty contentious. People argue a lot about schools and the value of schooling. But one thing this shows is how valuable our existing school system is for learning, that when you take away significant parts of our traditional schooling system, our kids really fall behind on the measures that we count as making progress. One of the things that is the most disturbing about this discussion is how the losses are disproportionately falling on the kids who rely on school the most. And that really shows how we need to have renewed investment in our schools to make sure that all kids have a chance at having successful learning experiences.
Say more about that disproportionate effect.
I think if you look at the New York Times just had an article about this, and they said that the people in the lowest category of test performance lost the most from being out of school. And I think this is for a couple of different reasons. First of all, kids who score higher on tests tend to go to schools with more resources. And so their teachers typically had experience with sort of digital platforms and other forms of communicating instruction. And the kids who were in schools where the kids are struggling tend to have not made those investments in technologies for learning and personalized learning because they're so focused on trying to help kids master basic skills in the schools.
So we're seeing the pandemic compounding these disadvantages that some students were already experiencing.
Yeah, I think it's really important for us to recognize that signal, that this was sort of another indicator of how important schooling is for moving towards equitable learning in our society. But it also talks about, now, what are we going to do about it? There's all this research that's been done around the difference between remediation and engagement. And remediation is when you try to catch students up to a level where they're supposed to be. And engagement is when you try to meet students where they're at and move forward. And I guess what I'm worried about is that the rhetoric of learning loss is going to lead us down a path of remediation that we know does not engage young learners in their work. Like the catch-up metaphor might work at the policy level, but it's really hard for second and first graders to picture their learning as catching up.
But that is how we talk about it. We talk about students able to read at grade level or being two levels ahead or being behind. That's common in how we discuss it.
I think it is common in the policy world and in the public world. I think there's many teachers and many folks who are researchers in this space who talk about meeting students where they are and trying to develop skills from the interests that they bring to schools. And we know this for a long time in education research. The best way to get students to do well on tests is to prepare them to do well on tests. In other words, to have curricula that teach the kind of skills that lead to success on standardized tests. And in many cases, those skills are not particularly transferable. Like learning to read apart from your interest in reading and learning to calculate apart from cultivating an interest in math, has value within schools, but has less value in the world.
Well, I mean, that naturally brings up the question then. I mean, we see these test scores are down for the first time in a very long time. Are nationwide test scores an effective way to measure student learning and perhaps what we've lost in the pandemic?
I think that the test score system that we've developed is a good indicator for how successful our schools are at teaching young people what we want them to know. Mm. And schools are still the best path for social equity. They're the best path for opportunity. And so in that context, test scores are a very important indicator. There are other indicators. There are other ways to see, to measure the degree to which students are engaged in their learning and can make progress towards fulfilling lives and careers that the pandemic sort of opened up this possibility. I'll give you an example. A lot of young people during the pandemic found their at-home schooling not that engaging. And there's been a tremendous explosion in like YouTube creativity, young people making videos about their interests, participating in online cultures, doing like video gaming cultures, that has led to a real explosion in the kind of skills that young people are learning that are relevant in their careers. But our schools really focus on the kinds of skills that are measured by standardized testing, which, again, is valuable, but doesn't tell the whole picture.
We're talking with Rich Halverson, who's a professor of educational leadership and policy analysis in the UW-Madison School of Education. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What have you seen in children throughout the pandemic? Perhaps you're a teacher or you're a parent. What's happening with the kids in your lives? What kind of help do you see them needing, or what solutions do you see? You can give us a call now at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@wpr.org. When we are talking about this, Rich, we are looking at the national assessments and that, in particular, this 9-year-old age, right around the third grade level. Why is that an important benchmark when we're thinking about student learning and the information that we're giving them, the way we're teaching them?
The third grade reading tests have been important for a really long time because they make the transition, they mark the transition from young people moving from the mechanics of reading, sort of the phonics, grammar mastery, to interest-based, content-based literacy. And for years, our schools have been formed around the idea that you got to have the basics down before you move to interest-based learning. And so the third grade reading tests, which really get at the structural parts of literacy, have been elevated as really important indicators of how successful our schools are being. Now, you know, a lot of young people come to school with the rudiments of reading already developed. Some young people come to school with, and that's what they have, is what school gives them. That's why the third grade measure has been so important over the years.
Schools can provide resources and opportunities. That's one part of the equation. So is a responsibility or that falls on a parent to help students, you know, stay on top of things. I know you've said you don't like the idea of catching up, but to really try to meet whatever bar is set for their grade and their curricula, what is that split and how do we figure it out? What's the school's responsibility versus what we should be expecting of parents?
This is a really interesting question, Keely, because there have been a number of folks in the research world who have been interested in studying what do wealthy and upper class families do to support education for their children. And there is support, reading at home, that sort of thing. But there's also a tremendous investment in engagement activities, arts activities, athletics activities, new literacy activities like computer coding, these sorts of things, and after school programs and summer camps, all of which create a sort of a powerful learning atmosphere for young people where literacy becomes an important part of how they engage in these kinds of programs. So it is true that families that invest in these kinds of opportunities for their children give their children a leg up. They have a wider range of experiences that make their learning relevant. On the other side of the spectrum, poor families don't have the resources to invest in those kinds of activities that make literacy and math learning relevant to young people. They just got schools. And so it really makes it important for us to think about schools as the pathway, not only for skill mastery for young people, but also to cultivate their interest in learning.
We're talking to UW Madison Educational Policy Professor Rich Halverson, talking about a decline in nationwide elementary school test scores since the start of the pandemic and what we can do to help kids learn. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What have you seen the pandemic do with children's education? What have you seen change in teachers? Maybe you are one. What are the things you have to think about now that you didn't a few years ago? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Looking forward to hearing from you as our conversation continues here on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina. Our guest is Rich Halverson. He's a professor of educational leadership and policy analysis in the UW-Madison School of Education. And he's with us today to look at how pandemic learning loss hurt nationwide elementary school test scores and the ways that we can think about that, the ways also that we can help students catch up. Taking your calls at 800-642-1234 or emails at ideas@wpr.org. Rich, what advice would you give to parents who are trying to figure out how to support their students right now in this really, unique moment in education?
I think thank you for that question, Keely. I think that the one thing is to listen to students, listen to young people and their learning about their learning experiences. We've been waiting for years in the country for a digital revolution in schooling, where schools would start to take advantage of the same kinds of technologies that are used all over the rest of the world for learning. And during COVID, it largely happened. I have my daughter is in Madison Public Schools, a proud student at West High School. And prior to the pandemic, there was relatively little use of things like Google Classroom and other virtual tools to coordinate learning. And now all of her classes are on Google Classroom. And so this allows our learners to be so much more autonomous than they were before in creating their own learning spaces. So having parents listen and watch how their children are engaging in learning is really important, to learn alongside of them. The other thing is that there's so much more information that we have about the progress that young people are making. Schools use very sophisticated testing instruments to show how much progress a student has made, and typically those data are available in some way from the teacher or from the school. So understanding where their children are on the pathway to progress and help talking with them about what they can do to move them forward is also a good suggestion. My final suggestion is that I mentioned YouTube before. I mean, YouTube is just an amazing variety of learning resources that many young people found during the pandemic. I mean, you could find a lecture on anything. You could find an interactive learning activity on any concept in math or literacy. And so parents who are interested in doing some work along with their children to help advance learning can find lots and lots of really high quality resources online.
As much as we see schools trying to operate in a post-COVID world, coronavirus still spreads everywhere, schools, classrooms. Do you think schools are prepared enough now to handle these disruptions?
I think they're more prepared now than they were, in 2020. Mainly because of this forced reliance on technological tools. One of the articles that's referenced in the Times article led me to think about these new technologies that are available that provide instruction to young people based on their level of performance. They're called computer adaptive learning systems. And in many schools have been skeptical of computer adaptive learning tools because they look like they replace teachers. And of course they don't, because nothing replaces a good teacher. But I think what's happened during COVID is that people have seen the value of these kinds of tools as supplementary. And teachers are increasingly seeing these things. They're not as good as what I can do as a teacher, but they can sure help me guide my students at the levels where they need support. So I think that the awareness and the use of technologies for learning is really gives teachers a step up. So if, you know, God forbid we had another outbreak crisis, teachers would be much better prepared to support student learning.
Talking with Rich Halverson, a professor of educational leadership and policy analysis in the UW-Madison School of Education. Just a few more minutes for your call at 800-642-1234. Rich, I want to stick with this idea of technology, though, because just in the news this week, we have schools out of New York City saying, we don't need snow days because we have this technology now. And, you know, I'm a little bit torn in personally experiencing this, trying to think about it. You know, if I have access to use my school issued device at home with internet access, I can understand how that might help continue learning so that there aren't disruptions. And I can also see the flip side where students who don't have that accessibility could be further left behind. What do you see in this?
I think one of the main policy pushes that I've seen in the last year and a half is to create universal access to learning technologies. Like the Madison School District has undergone a tremendous push in the last 2 years to make sure that every student has a viable device to support their learning. The idea of the digital divide has been really accelerated in closing the digital divide by recent policy initiatives and funding initiatives. So we're not there yet, but it's getting closer so that learning can be accessible by most learners. But on the other hand, I grew up as a Wisconsin boy, and man, snow days are the gift. You get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and then you hear a call that there's no school and you get to go back to sleep, or I'll shovel the walk. I mean, that's a gift I hope we don't have to give up.
Yeah, there's an emotional component there as we think about the education component. When you assess the information about students and teachers realizing that students are, you know, behind where we'd like them to be, and we're talking about things like these national standardized test scores dropping, what kind of ripple effects can you see the last 2 years having on education?
I think, you know, the global pandemic as a result of COVID is an unprecedented event in most of our lives. You know, most of us have never seen a global crisis that shuts down basic institutions like this. And we are just now starting to get indicators of the effects of this extraordinary human event on our lives. I think my concern is that these early signals not be taken for the main signal. So if there's test score dropping, does that mean we're not going to pay attention to the skill development that happened as teachers and learners started to take control of their own learning environments? Are we going to move towards a remediation framework in our schooling system as a whole to catch up? Or are we going to really focus on the idea that we can reinvent schools now based on where students are as well as where we need them to be? And so my main concern is taking these early signals as the only signals and not listening to the full range of evidence that we're going to get from COVID as we move forward.
Do you think that's possible on the policy side, given all of the politics of education?
I think there's a loud voice in the policy world in education that considers test scores the measure of education progress. But it's a voice. It's not the only voice. There's many, many people who are in the education space who speak for the value of the arts or the value of expression or the value of attainment or just showing up, the value of persistence, the value of what young people bring to their education, what the assets that families bring to education. So I feel like that is a voice, and it's a loud voice, but it's not the only voice. And, you know, as a public institution, schools are obligated to listen to the public's voice. And I think this will be an ongoing conversation as we try to figure out how to change schools as a result of COVID.
Yeah, certainly an ongoing conversation for sure. Rich Halverson, really appreciate your time as we walk through everything today when it comes to the latest information that we have about those test scores and what you see happening in education. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Keely.
Rich Halverson is a professor of educational leadership and policy analysis in the UW-Madison School of Education. He was with us today to share the ways that we might be able to think about the idea of kids catching up on pandemic learning loss, how we can consider it as a nation, and really how much weight we should put into the fact that we saw nationwide test scores showing a decline in elementary school math and reading levels, which are crucial for our understanding of how we are educating our children.